Are you a Genzibar user or super user? Well, it's time to jam at Genzibar Jam, May 31st through June 3rd in Orlando, Florida. Register today at jam.genzibar.com. Are you ready to revolutionize your higher ed marketing game? Don't miss out on Element 451's Engage Summit, June 27 and 28. Explore the cutting-edge world of education and AI technology and unleash your creativity like never before. Register today at engage.element451.com and use promo code EDUP50 for $50 off. Welcome back, everybody. It's your time to ed up on the EDUP Experience podcast, where we make education your business. You know who I am if you've been listening, but you don't know why I'm doing this special edition episode. This one's special because it's all about Lindenwood University, where I work, and our recent acquisition of Dorsey College. Mergers and acquisitions are something that we talk about all the time in higher ed. Tons of articles, videos, people discussing how they happen, how they work, but not a lot of people in higher ed have actually been through this process. There is so much work, and I mean so much work, pre-merger acquisition, during merger acquisition, post-merger and acquisition. By the way, what's the difference between a merger and an acquisition? What is it if you're acquiring a for-profit institution versus a nonprofit institution? How do those things work? When is the control given up? What does that mean? Are these schools merging and an identity is going to supersede another, or are they operating within a system? And that's what we did here at Lindenwood. We set up the Lindenwood education system, of which both Lindenwood University and Dorsey College are within, right? So they're within the Lindenwood education system, and we're set up to take on additional institutions. So I asked my colleagues, Dr. John Porter, president of Lindenwood University, Mark Falkowski, general counsel, and VP of Strategy and Innovation, Rob Westervelt, to come to the microphone to talk about how this all happened, to pull the rug back, if you will, open the hood, give us a look inside about how a merger and acquisition, merger or acquisition, happens in higher ed, and what are some of the similarities, differences in looking at acquisition targets, how you think about the strategy and the communication, to give you as much detail as possible on how something like this takes place. I hope you enjoy this episode. My first question was to Dr. John Porter, saying, how did this all come about when it comes to strategy and the growth of the institution? I hope you enjoy this episode, and we'll talk to you at the end.
Executing on it was, it's not rocket science, but it's got to be top of mind, and it's got to be part of what you would consider your growth strategy. So the way we started here was we actually started with our faculty and staff and put together a small M&A team and started off with, here's some of the things that we want to consider as we look at M&A and the activity that goes around it. So obviously you look at programming, you look at financials, you look at also gaps at the institution and maybe some of the low-hanging fruit that you would want to go after. And you kind of start there. And then you go from there, and as you iterate, and by that I mean looking at, you know, the thousands of schools that are out there and looking at some of the things that we want to pull together and look at, then you whittle that down. And as we have found here at Lindenwood also is that it changes over time. Your needs change. Maybe you get a little bit more expert in certain areas and look at your programming. And so you therefore, what you may be looking for in an M&A transaction would be different. It's much different today than what it was when we started out here. But that initial team that we put together were made up of finance, economics, and accounting folks, as well as business folks. And so that was a great team. And they really put together some great collateral for us to be looking at. And we finally honed it down to, once we gave them an opportunity to look at, based on our criteria, they put together the one pager that says, here's all the things to consider, and would you recommend us as an executive leadership team moving on and furthering our perspective of this acquisition target. And so we started that way, and it was a great, I think a great exercise for us to go through. And I think it proved to be very, very beneficial overall.
So you set forward on this path. You decide we're going to go and look at acquisition targets. Do the acquisition targets, and Mark, I'm going to come over to you for this one. Acquisition targets. I'm just thinking about who's listening to this in higher ed, thinking these that you just don't put those words together typically in higher ed, which is kind of cool that we're talking about that way. But somebody who you're considering for a merger or acquisition, because those are different, right? And come with different everything. How do you decide? You're looking at finance, you're looking at all these things, you go, okay, we're going to execute this. How do you even begin? How does it work?
Well, I think it was my first day, maybe my first week, when my office was right next to John's and he came in. And his, I think, you know, acquisition transactions are just in John's DNA, and he has to start looking at this. And so he had talked to the board, and it's really about, I think the first step is having buy-in from your leadership, because you need a, you know, a strong stomach to pull these off. It's not a smooth path. There will be complications. And so you need buy-in that this is, and commitment that we're going to do this, and not that we're going to bail when things get a little tough. So we had that, and that was a thing that I think made us successful and ultimately sets us apart from a lot of other schools who just talk about it. But once you determine that that's the path you want to go down, right, then you have to start figuring out what that means. And John, you know, described our process at the beginning of figuring out who could be a good target and whether, right, you're exactly right, a merger is different than an acquisition, and they might have different attributes. But based on what you want to do and what your objective is, you start distinguishing it and narrowing the list down. But that in and of itself is a challenge. And then once you've even whittled the list down, you have to determine, how do you even make that outreach? Is it, you know, there's not a real estate listing for this, right? And so who do you call? Do you call the president? Do you call the board chair? Who makes the call? Huh? Exactly. So you have to figure all those things out and think about, you know, whether you want to be represented too. And we determined it halfway through our journey that it made sense to be represented by an investment banker who does these types of deals and is just really known in the space. And I think that showed people that we were serious about it when they picked up our phone call, and also just gave us a level of expertise that you wouldn't necessarily have in house. So engaging someone like that really strengthened our external team as well. And then we're off to the races. Then it was, that's their job. They will help you out. They will walk you through the process. They will, you know, do the screens, do the criteria, and help, you know, your, I guess, objective criteria take form as to what you want to do. And that's kind of the first step. I think the pre-step before you even connect with another school, there's all this planning to do.
There is a lot of planning.
That's a fact.
Part of the planning is an evolving strategy, isn't it, Rob? The strategy changed. And that's one of the things that I think when, you know, you see people read the news, they see the result, Lindenwood acquires Dorsey, everything that goes into that. You're talking about an evolving, changing, almost liquid type strategy, right? Because even in our conversations, every time we talked, there was some change, some evolution. And typically in higher ed, and you know this, change is hard. It's hard to communicate. So we've been talking about acquisition for a long time, previous to me even coming on board. And sorry, see, I hit my own microphone. In 2022, this is something that has to be laid out, because higher ed doesn't move fast. Change comes in a difficult way. How important is the communication of the strategy always repeatedly to actually getting to the result?
Yeah, I think you want to make a distinction between the strategy and the strategic plan. So if we think about our overarching strategy, it hasn't changed, but the plan does change. Certainly the strategy will evolve as, you know, you go to execute. A lot of people think the hardest part of strategy is creating a strategic plan, and that ends up being, as hard as it is, the easiest part. The hard part is implementing the strategy. And I think in this case, you know, our strategic vision to be the next great learner-centric university and redesigning the university around learner needs and expectations, really trying to make sure we're structured in such a way that we can anticipate what students need, deliver it when and how they need it. None of that has changed. However, as you implement your strategy, and as you start learning what you don't know, and that's definitely true of M&A, we learned a lot just getting into it. Well, then your plan's going to start changing. And so it definitely evolved from when we started with the very concept of doing M&A to actually doing our first acquisition. The plan had to evolve to meet that strategic vision.
Let's just have like an open debrief here, guys. We talk about this. We've done it. It's done. What did we learn? How did going into this leave us in terms of knowledge now? How do we feel? Are we more prepared? What work had to start? What did we have to do that we didn't know that we did know? What has to happen now? And is it done, or we're a month in? Is it over? I mean, so, you know, John, we'll start with you. What have we learned? Are we where we thought we would be? Are we in a better place? Are we in the same place? Give us your thoughts on the university as a whole of where we've ended up.
Well, I think we've learned a lot of things. We've learned pre and post. What does it mean to acquire another institution? I think what we learned and what we discussed a little bit is there's a difference between merger and acquisition. We originally started out as we wanted to merge and bring institutions on and merge them and consolidate them into Lindenwood. We found that's a very, very difficult and disruptive kind of thing to do. So as we were looking at opportunities and we were involved in one, we felt that was probably not the right direction for us. And so through a lot of work and a lot of work on Mark's effort, you know, we came up with our systems approach, which is what we did with Dorsey. We bring them on to keep their own OPID, to keep their brand. And so they're a division of Lindenwood Education System. So that made the process much simpler. Plus, it made it attractive for other institutions to want to be part of LES, knowing they're under that umbrella. So we learned a lot, I would say pre-post. We're learning. We're in that transition right now in the post. And so there's a lot of documentation and things that have to happen. But I think where we are as an institution, we have kind of really put this in a position where we know what we want. We know that you have to be agile and you have to be willing to change. And so the criteria that we laid out, let's say 3 years ago in terms of our acquisition targets is much different and probably evolved, as you said, probably 5, 6, 7 times over the time up until we acquired Dorsey. And so you have to expect that. And because you may decide to build something, you think about our strategic plan and the three pillars, adapt, build, and engage. And on the build side, we were looking at one path, but then we were also looking at potentially acquiring that skill or expertise from another university. And we ultimately decided to do both, build our own and acquire. And so I think people, you just have to know that when you go down this path, you have to be willing to be flexible. You have to listen to the input. I think we're well positioned now to probably quickly decide whether or not something's a good target or not a good target based on all of the really hundreds of schools that we've gone through and honed in on. So I think pre and post, it's important to pay attention to both. It's important to be flexible and agile and be able to change on the dime at times. And but I think one thing that I give the team a lot of credit for here, when we pulled the trigger, we pulled the trigger. We went all in, full in, and we had the right resources lined up. We had experts in the fields lined up, and it was probably one of the smoothest acquisitions that I've seen. And great teamwork and partnerships.
It's all part of the plan.
What about you guys?
Yeah, we learned so much and developed this, I think, skill set and expertise that sets Lindenwood apart. And it starts, I mean, if you think about it in phases, there's the initial phase that you start with, you have your plan and your strategy that you want to go down this road. But before you even talk to another school, there is a huge amount of work that goes into even that. And so it can be a grind at times, but it's every week it's talking to people and thanks to all the people who talk to us and fielded our calls and,
you know, that was me again.
Sorry. Helped us see what was out there, before we even talk to another school. And then once you engage another school and you identify one, it's available, they're open to talking, then you have to see if there's a deal to be had. And so
there's a difference between being open to talking and being willing to be acquired or to merge, right? And isn't that something that you have to really rip through and discover?
Yeah, great point. I think there's a lot of schools who are open to talking and who hear about mergers and acquisitions and they think it's interesting. Like Dr. Porter said, it's a great growth strategy if you can pull it off. If you're looking for inorganic growth and can add a lot of programs and students and help you grow your institutional mission of serving and reaching more students. But when it comes down to the details, and if you haven't thought it through, it's, like I said, not for the faint of heart. And particularly if you're the institution being acquired, not all schools, I think, have fully thought it through when they have those conversations. So yeah, even if you talk to someone and they seem interested, they ultimately may not be interested before you even get to doing the deal part, which is starting with the LOI and working through the terms and conditions of that, going through the diligence process. You have to identify your team. And there's a real small world of people who even do these deals. And so everyone knows each other. Everyone's worked on other sides on other deals. But it's really critical to, you know, compile and assemble that team that's going to get you through this, because It is a unique process that is not like other acquisitions. The regulatory environment, the accreditation aspects from different schools, especially schools with different accreditations and even multiple accreditations, there's just a lot of angles to work. And even within those teams, you know, they have the financial diligence team, the quality of earnings, the fair market valuation, the cyber, the IT, you have the corporate attorneys, you got the regulatory attorneys, you got the employment attorneys, the tax attorney. I mean, you just these resources that need to go in to make this, to do this right, because you don't want to get down the road and then have it be a failure or not work out. And then once you, if you can get all that lined up and you get all the pieces, you know, fall in your favor, and then you finally close and negotiate the PA and get to the end, well, then there's all this post-close work too. And that's what we're doing right now. And that's when the real work starts is, you know, the folks may know the process with the Department of Education really starts post-close. That's when the applications start and their evaluation process begins. And that's what we're going through right now. And so it's a great learning process. It's something that I think you cannot know everything going into it.
It's time to jam.
Oh, yeah.
At Genzibar Jam. The annual meeting for the Genzibar community in Orlando, Florida, May 31st through June 3rd, 2023. You are invited to join us for the annual gathering of this Genzibar community at the Gaylord Palms Resort in Orlando, Florida. Don't miss it. You're going to discover new tips and tricks that you can save your office time, resources, and money every single day. It's time to jam. Register now at jam.genzibar.com.
Oh, yeah.
Don't settle for average marketing strategies. Join us at the Element 451 Engage Summit, June 27 and 28, and discover how to harness the power of AI technology in higher ed marketing. Connect with industry leaders, explore cutting-edge technologies, and future-proof your marketing strategies. Use promo code EDUP50 for $50 off. Register now at engage.element451.com. Rob, to you, and then Mark, you guys are... You did a lot of this in terms of presenting when we decided we're going to do the Lindenwood educational system. That became very clear what we wanted to do. We use merger and We use merger and acquisition simultaneously. They mean different things, and they mean different things by your tax status. If you're a for-profit institution and somebody says you're going to acquire a for-profit institution and there's an exchange, monetary exchange, people understand that. I think a for-profit institution like Dorsey understood that, right? And who we acquired them from understood that. We have talked to a number of nonprofit institutions and it's not the same. The dollars, it's not an exchange of money necessarily. And the nonprofit institution may not be ready mentally or to give up their identity, because you do, right? When you become acquired, you're giving up some part of your identity to another entity, as it were. And that's hard to get across. I think people talk about, oh yeah, it's M&A, but it's M&A. But that means something. And I don't think every institution realizes that it means that you're going to have to shift your resources or your identity to somebody else that's going to control it. That's a fact, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. I think to Mark's point, you're not going to know everything getting into this. And, you know, we've been through so many meetings, going to different campuses, talking to different people, different kinds of institutions. And it's through those repetitions that you discover something new every single time. And that really helps you to get a body of knowledge about how this, all the nuance to this. So that when, like President Porter is saying, now we have different kinds of conversations because we understand this so much better. And we know what the issues are for each opportunity. And now we're learning how to talk to different groups differently too. Because as you were just saying, when you're talking to a nonprofit group, it's a different conversation because they have totally different concerns. The transactions are going to be different. And so you now we're starting to jump to that main point sooner, which is giving up control. Because ultimately, when you're dealing with a nonprofit, that's the big issue, is are they willing to give up control? And in many cases, they are not.
Even when they're in financial trouble.
Right.
Right. That's interesting. Isn't that interesting, Mark? Because... We've been talking to a lot of folks, and there are a lot out there. And, you know, typically schools wait too long. They wait too long, and then they go, help us. And I'm not just saying for Lindenwood, this is pretty par for the course in higher ed. So, and it's too late. I mean, how far out should schools be thinking? How long does this typically take, you know, if for to be acquired or to even think about acquiring another school? What kind of timelines are involved in this?
Well, that's right, Joe. And President Porter said just this week, he talked to another college president or board chair, and he said a regional accreditor had said they've received 4 phone calls. John, you don't need to tell your story. What did they tell you?
Yeah, that obviously they're going to be closing their doors. And so, you know, it's, but
yikes!
But I would just say this, though, that's very true. But there's projections and trajectories. And so you can't ignore the data. The data will tell you, you know, you think about enrollment and it's not rocket science. If you think about enrollment declines, you think about revenue declines. And when you're looking at this trajectory, you know, it's time to, you know, you got to raise the red flag. The hair is on fire. We've said it here at Lindenwood. We're not unlike anybody else. We're fixing some things internally here. We see the light at the end of the tunnel. We see some great things, but you can't ignore the data. And what's happening is you're 100% right, Joe. Some of the institutions have ignored the data, thinking they can survive on their own. And unfortunately, it doesn't turn out that way. So the discussion I had even this past week was within a week 4 institutions closing. And it's that realization that you do have to give up control when you integrate with another or go under another system like the Lindenwood education system. However, the good news about it, though, is, you know, the way we've got it set up is you have opportunity to keep your identity. So you can keep your brand, your identity, the things that you're doing. And hopefully, you know, you can look at a shared services model that will give you opportunity for cost savings, best practices, and best tool sets. And so that's the gain that you get out of it and for what the acquiree gets out of this. And obviously longevity, you know, I think it's sad when these institutions close their doors, because I think about their alumni. You think about their faculty and staff, and certainly their current student base. And so you want to avoid that, but I think egos get in the way, and we know that. And you have to give up that ownership piece and governance. But think about the future and what it can do, because an acquiring institution hopefully has assets and, you know, available assets that can potentially speak into the acquiree and hopefully give them longevity. So you got to think of the big picture, but you know, those warning signs, those red alerts are there well in advance, before.
Why do you think that? I mean, what you're saying is right on, but it's also true. That's scary. So you're a college president, you're sitting there, board chair sitting there, you see these red alerts and then go, you know what, we're going to give it one more year and enrollment's going to turn around. It's just bound to turn around. We're going to build a new program and we're going to increase by 500 students. And then reality comes, it's a year later, things are as they were or even worse. Is it a general lack of wanting to realize the inevitable? Is it ego? Is it a lack of business knowledge? Is it all those things? Is it, I don't know, pride? Why does it even happen? Because you're a business guy, you would be able to see those things and go, okay, wait a second, we got to do something here well in advance. Is it just a lack of general business knowledge, possibly?
I think it's well intentions. People feel like, listen, I can make this work. Presidents think they can make this work. And so they want to give it every last ditch effort. You can't blame them for that. But you can only go so far at times and say, listen, the writing's on the wall. The numbers are there. The analytics speak for themselves. And so you know, when you've been going down this road and you can't see a way that you can pull out of this, I mean, clearly, even the institutions right now, they're getting an idea of what enrollment and revenue is going to look like for the fall. And you have to be looking at it right now. And if you're not, then obviously that's a different thing that you need to focus on, or a different issue. And so the warning signs are there. You got to give yourself enough advance notice. And actually one institution or one of the banks, I should say, sourcing, you know, basically just they gave the warning signs. They weren't getting paid. And so when you see all of that and it's accumulating, then you know that there's time to do something different. And you just can't wait too long. And again, we're not trying to throw rocks in a glass house here. We've got our own things to work on. But I think the signs are there. I think everybody wants to do the right thing just in terms of we want to hang on. But at some point in time, you got to raise the flag and say, listen, I need help. And hopefully there's other institutions out there like ourselves. We're not the only ones that could be in a position that could lend, you know, advice and counsel, expertise, resources, those kinds of things to help other institutions.
What I was thinking, that's right, Dr. Porter. And I mean, one regional creditor had 4 calls in 1 week. The school is telling them they will be closing their doors. I mean,
yikes!
Right. So this is accelerating. And I want to get back to your question about the distinction between, you know, for-profits and nonprofits. And I guess it goes both, you know, this applies evenly when we're evaluating potential targets. You look at the actuals, you write historical actuals, and then also look at their projected numbers as well. And that'll give you an idea of how to value them, what direction they could be heading in. But one of the challenges we found when talking with nonprofits is that nonprofits technically don't have owners, right? So they're not owned by someone like a for-profit
right.
school would be. And because of that nature of it, there's no one, like you said, it could be a non-cash transaction when the deal happens because there's no owner to pay the money to take the equity out. And so there can be other consideration exchanged. And that's what we thought developing the system works really well for, that where we have a parent at the top, a nonprofit organization.
Start at the beginning. We have Lindenwood Educational System at the top now.
Correct. We have Lindenwood Educational System, a Missouri nonprofit corporation. And that is the parent company, and that's where, and it has a nonprofit, educational, you know, its bylaws, its mission, all that is aimed at performing these functions. Then underneath it, we have, we just added Dorsey College, and that was a for-profit school. We created a nonprofit Michigan educational corporation on this asset transaction. That's another point of distinction. If you're doing a stock deal or an asset deal, and we, you know, contributed their assets into the entity below them, into the nonprofit. But again, because nonprofits don't have owners, it's not technically a subsidiary, but there's a sole membership agreement. And that's how nonprofits can be governed by other nonprofits, by entering into a sole membership agreement. And that's that structure. And that allows nonprofits to continue with their own identity, their own, you know, it's its own operating entity. Lindenwood University, Lindenwood Education System, Dorsey College, those are all separate entities with their own tax ID numbers, their own employees, their own operations, their own staff, their own student. They're all separate. But in this structure we've created, in this kind of ecosystem where we think there's a real path forward for schools who want to join, because it creates more durability, lets us have a wider portfolio and weather hard times and compete on scale. But the challenge, I guess getting back to my initial thought, was it's hard and challenging for nonprofits to want to give up that ultimate fiduciary control, which would have to happen.
What that means, typically their board, so if a nonprofit gives up control, their board would be eliminated and they would become the governing board of the person of the institution acquiring becomes the board of the acquiree.
Totally correct. Right. And so
those are the hard things for schools to hear. And not everybody says them. If you're going into an acquisition, if you're going to be thinking about that, you're probably giving up in our model that we have, Lindenwood Educational System, the identity can remain and the institution can operate as they did yesterday for tomorrow. That's the whole point of the Lindenwood Educational System. In other scenarios, your institution may be phased out.
Yeah, maybe right. Absorbed. If it's truly merged, you think about it in the number of surviving entities post transaction. And so when in our situation, the scenario we've created, there can be multiple surviving corporate entities where schools can exist. Whereas if you do a true merger, there's one surviving entity, and typically the school, the bigger school, is going to acquire it, and the other school will be, you know, cease to exist.
Typically, as I talk to Mark in any situation, I get confused. If you're confused now, that's pretty typical.
What the heck is going on?
But that's okay. It is confusing. The point is these are confusing. It's very easy to talk about it. It's another thing to pull it off. And Rob, I'm going to come to you real fast to talk about the how, because the messaging behind this, how do you communicate it? And more importantly, how do you communicate it internally? Because there are a lot of people that have an interest in this. What are you guys doing? What does this mean for me? How is my life going to be impacted? How do I get behind something like this? This is an important part of communication. It's been embedded in our strategic plan. I would bet that and Dr. Porter laid out some statistics the other day. I think what 85% of companies don't meet about their strategic plan or don't talk about it.
Yeah, that's correct.
We talk about ours all the time. That is that an important part of the how? Because if you don't have people on board, it's not going to happen, right?
Yes. And I don't know if you can hear the music in the background, but Men at Work is playing.
We only play music in your headphones to distract you. Dr. Porter and I do not hear a single thing.
You're missing out.
I hear it as well. Rob is.
I'm not alone.
For everybody listening, apparently we're picking up a radio feed in two of the headphones for Rob Westervelt and Mark Falkowski, but not for me.
So I think one of the critical things to, and going back to your question to Mark, is that you have to form a perspective on the future. And that's a big part of what strategy is you're saying, this is what we believe about the future. And then you form a strategy around that. And when we look at our acquisition strategy, we summarize it as combined to compete, because our perspective on the future is that this sort of decade of disruption that we just came out of is going to be followed by the great consolidation. So we had a perspective going into M&A that there was going to be a major contraction in the market, and that you're going to see a lot of schools disappear. So when we have this structure set up, we created a way, an opportunity for schools who acknowledge this, right? You have to believe that this is what's going to happen in the future first. And then we created an instance where they could continue on. They could have the opportunity to continue their missions by combining with us to compete going forward and create this ecosystem.
Talked about it like an investment portfolio once.
Yeah,
I like
right.
that analogy.
Durability, like Mark said. But so to your question, the way that you get people on board is to help them understand this is what we mean when we're talking about our strategy, that we have a particular view of the future and that we have a brighter future if we organize ourselves around the belief that we have. Now, the schools that are going to be successfully acquired in a situation like this, they have to share that belief. They have to say, you know what? I'm looking at the future. You're right. This is going to contract. I want to exist in the future. And so I'm going to combine with a Lindenwood to continue the legacy of my institution. And that, though, is the big hurdle, because that means, to do that, you're going to have to give up some control. But our intention is that you thrive, because the reason why we would want to bring somebody on is we believe we can do more together than separate. And that's the whole idea behind this. And that goes into our communication to our own internal people, is to say, this is what we're trying to do. It's good for everyone. We want to create a win-win scenario, especially for our own institution. So I think that sort of perspective on the future and having clarity around that, that makes the communication a lot easier.
Well, you've heard it here, ladies and gentlemen. This is part one of a two-part series on merger and acquisition, Lindenwood University's acquisition of Dorsey College. You have to wait, Falkowski, for the next episode that we're going to start right after this. But we're pulling back the rug a little bit, ladies and gentlemen. You've just ed-upped. Are you a Genzibar user or super user? Well, it's time to jam at Genzibar Jam, May 31st through June 3rd in Orlando, Florida. Register today at jam.genzibar.com. Experience Element 451's Engage Summit Conference this June and get ready to unleash the power of AI in higher ed marketing. Deep dive into how this emerging tech will revolutionize the education landscape. From personalized student engagement to turbocharging your marketing efforts with AI, these sessions are guaranteed to help you smash your enrollment goals. Connect with like-minded professionals, explore cutting-edge ed tech products and services, and leave with the knowledge to supercharge your institution's growth. Don't wait. Register now at engage.element451.com and seize your chance to lead the pack in the AI-driven education revolution. Use promo code EDUP50 for $50 off your registration.